Well, this morning, I want to talk about what it feels like to be God. You ever think about that? What it feels like to be God? You might think about things like, what do you suppose it feels like to be president of the United States? What do you suppose it feels like to be your boss and having somebody like you working for him? You ever consider that? Well, this morning we want to talk about, what does it feel like to be God? And I'll break this down. Not only what it feels like to be God, we could also call this, on our part, what it takes for us to be godly. You see, because that is godliness, is being like God. Not taking his place, but being like he is. Loving justice, loving mercy, loving truth, acting impartially, all of those things, you see, that's what it takes to be godly. The better we understand God, the better our chances are of being godly. Do you understand? Does that make sense to you? And so, this morning we're going to look at Hosea chapter 3. If you have your Bibles, you open them up there. Well, I guess maybe you won't have to. We might have everything on the screen for you, but Hosea chapter 3. We're going to look at Hosea chapter 3. It's got five verses in it. And this is another event with Gomer. There's some commentators say, no, this isn't Gomer, it's another woman. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. What matters is that it is God's command for Hosea to go to this woman, or go to this woman again, the same as we found in chapter 1. But there's a couple of differences, a couple of additions to this now that we're going to see that God added to it when he sent Hosea out to marry this prostitute, to find her. There's a couple of differences between chapter 3 and chapter 1. I want to point those out this morning because those differences are very enlightening. So Hosea chapter 3, verse 1. Then the Lord said to me, Hosea's talking, the Lord said to Hosea, go again, love a woman who is loved by a lover and is committing adultery, a paramour. Now, you know, you study, you learn all kinds of words. Paramour is not a word I've ever used that I can think of in a conversation, but it means a lover. Go love a woman who has a lover and is committing adultery. God told Hosea to go out and find this woman and love her. But he adds, they're just like the love of the Lord for the children of Israel, who took to other gods and love the raisin cakes of the pagans. So, Hosea, go again. Now remember in chapter 1, he married Gomer. She had three children. God gave them names that represented his action toward Israel. You're not my people. I will not have mercy. I will take vengeance on Jezreel. Those three children. In my mind, as I'm getting ready for this, and I'm thinking about Hosea's situation, he had to, we'll find out, go buy this woman back. Now, if she was his wife, why would he have to go buy her back? That's the question that stumps a lot of people. But I'm thinking that here we have a man of God, Hosea, who married this woman, who was unfaithful. She had three children. Now, here she's stuck at the house with three screaming brats and some kind of a self-righteous husband. I'm out of here. And she left. And I'm sure that she abandoned the children and her husband to let them fend for themselves. And she went off. So Hosea had to go find her, go again, and love a woman who is committing adultery. I think in her desperate condition, Gomer went out, was committing adultery, playing a prostitute. She got, I guess the modern day phrase would be, and I don't think this is too harsh for church, but she got hooked up with a pimp and he would not let her go. She became a slave to this man and he wouldn't let her go, even though she was married to Hosea. So Hosea had to go again and love this woman who was committing adultery. Now, this is where the differences come in, and we'll get to them later for sure. But you know, it's difficult, at best, nearly impossible for human beings to do these kind of things. To love somebody that has been so blatantly unfaithful, that has betrayed and deserted you, to go search them out, find them, and love them. But you see, this is where God comes in, because he doesn't give up. I don't know how many of us have come to the end of our ropes and said, I'm done. I've done this for you so many times, I'm not going to do it anymore. You see how different that is from God, because God doesn't give up. Think back in your own life. Think back in your own life. When was the point, or where was the point where you had sinned enough that God could have said, I'm done with you. No more. No more. But God doesn't give up. That's the one of the ways it feels to be God. We know what it is to give up. We know what it is to come to the end of our rope. We know what that all feels like. And God just says, I'm not going to give up. So Hosea going after this woman again is like Israel's actions toward God. They went out after idols. They took to themselves other gods. Yah, Jehovah's the one that brought us out of Israel, out of Egypt. Blessed us in the wilderness. Blessed us when we conquered Canaan. But we don't need them now. We're doing fine by ourselves. They took other gods. It says that they loved the raisin cakes. Some versions might say the wine. Be that as it may. It's the delicacies, the dainties, the rich food of the pagans. They had a fondness for self-indulgence. You know what that is? Self-indulgence? If I was to hand you a piece of paper and a pencil and I'd ask you to write down what is self-indulgence from your experience, how do you indulge yourself? We would come up with this many different answers, this many different things, because we all do it differently, but it is all the same thing. It's satisfying myself. That's what the people in Israel came to. They had a fondness for it. They liked these other gods and the worship services. You've heard people say this too. I don't want to go there yet, but you've heard people say, oh, the worship was just wonderful. I really loved it. Worship isn't for us. I don't want to be the guy that rocks the boat or pops your bubble, but worship isn't for you. It's for God. It's got to make him happy. It's got to satisfy him. You see, and these idols that the Israelites were worshiping gave them opportunity for self-indulgence in all sorts of sinful ways. They had a fondness for that self-indulgence. They did not, for God, they did not have a fondness for God indulgence. I don't think that's a word. I made it up. You know what it is to indulge yourself. Do you understand what it is to indulge God? When he wants something out of you, are you ready to jump to it, to give it to him? To serve him that way? To help somebody? The Israelites, God concluded and compared them to an adulterous wife, unfaithful because they had that fondness for self-indulgence. And not God-indulgence. So Hosea says, I went out and bought her. He went out and bought her. This is what he had to pay for her. A half or 15 shekels of silver. Better put that up there. 15 shekels of silver. 15 pieces of silver. Now, you know, you've heard of 30 pieces of silver. I'm sure you've heard of that. That was what Judas got for Jesus. But 15 shekels of silver. In my investigation, I found out that 15 shekels of silver is half the price for a servant, man or woman, that has been injured by a bull. And in Numbers, it says that if a bull, yours, gets loose and gores a servant, you owe that servant's master 30 pieces of silver for the injury caused to the servant. Obviously, because they're going to have some time recuperating if it hadn't killed them. And so it's half that price. This is where Gomer fell to in her depravity, in her shame. She was valued only half. She had the half the value of an injured, gored servant, maid servant. 15 shekels of silver. Well, there was a half, 1.5 homers of barley. Now, I don't know exactly what that works out to in our measurements, but 1.5 homers of barley. The barley grain, the barley meal, flour, was used as an offering for an unfaithful wife. Now God instituted this, and we'll look at Numbers chapter 5 in a minute. But in Numbers chapter 5, God instituted this offering as part of a jealousy offering. Let's look at Numbers 5:15. It backs up this way. If a man's wife is or has been unfaithful and the husband doesn't know it, and he has marital relations with her, didn't know she was unfaithful, but then finds out or becomes jealous of her, he takes her to the priest. And this is where we end up here in verse 15. Then the man shall bring his wife to the priest. He shall bring the offering required for her, 1/10 of an epheth of barley meal. He shall pour no oil on it and put no frankincense on it, because it's a grain offering of jealousy, an offering of remembering, or bringing iniquity to remembrance. Now, for me, it was really kind of surprising to see God use these words in the law, that this barley is part of the offering for jealousy, to bring a remembrance of the iniquity, to remind you of it. And it's part of the price that Hosea had to pay for Gomer, to remind her and him and all of Israel of her unfaithfulness. So Hosea went out, did what he was told to do. In verse 3, for the children of Israel, God says, shall abide many days without a king or a prince, without sacrifice, without pillar, without ephod or teraphim. I'm not reading that one, am I? And I said to her, you shall stay with me. This is what Hosea said to Gomer. You shall stay with me many days. You shall not play the harlot, nor shall you have a man. So too will I be toward you. So what Hosea was to do was to take Gomer, set her down. My mother used this kind of a treatment on me when, or all of us kids, when we were little. Go sit in a chair. Did anybody else ever have to go sit in a chair? Go to your room. Okay. Well, we had too many good things going on in the room. But be that as it may, better go sit there, be by ourselves and think about it. Sit there and think about what you did. Or the worst one was, sit there till your dad gets home. Oh. And it was, why are you sitting there? Oh, that's just a nice view. He'd never buy that. But this is what Hosea had to do with Gomer, is take her and set her aside. And it said, you're going to stay with me many days. Many days. It's, don't know for sure how long. It's an undisclosed amount of time. Many days. You're going to stay with me. You're not going to play the harlot. You're not going to have a man. And that's the way I'm going to be towards you. No relations whatsoever. You are here, and it's like locked up in a cell. You're going to stay here until you learn something. So, this is what God says, for the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred pillar, without ephod or teraphim. This is, Hosea and Gomer were doing things that were symbolical of what God was going to do for all of Israel. We know that. That's no sweat. So God says, this is what's going to happen to Israel. They're going to have no king or prince. In the history of Israel, back in the day of Samuel, if you can read about it in 1 Samuel, Israel came up to Samuel and said, you know, we really want to have a king. So we can be like everybody else. We want to be like everybody else. Give us a king. Tell God we want a king. God says, wait. I'm your king. We don't want you to be our king. We want a king of our own, one we can see. Well, God wasn't ready to give him a king, but he gave him one anyway. Now he says here in Hosea 3:4, they're not going to have a king. They're not going to have any royalty whatsoever. And as you might know, or you might be thinking ahead, that when Babylon came to Jerusalem, or came into Samaria rather, not Jerusalem, came into Samaria, and took those people away, put them into exile. As a matter of fact, brought new people in and put them in their place. They were without a king, without a prince. They had no place for a sacrifice. The sacred pillar refers to their idol worship. Their ephod, the high priest, had a vest plate that had two stones in it. And they could get a word from God through these stones. Ask a question, you get a yes or no answer from these stones. They weren't even going to have that benefit. And the teraphim that he's talking about here is a household idol. You can maybe remember that when Jacob left Laban, Jacob's wife stole that from her father, that household god, and headed off with it. It was like a good luck charm. It wasn't like a garden gnome. This was something that was really pretty special to him. It was a good luck charm. So God says, you're not going to have a king or a prince. There's not going to be any royalty. You're not going to have any religious activities. No ephod and teraphim. And it was going to last for many days. That means it's going to be a long time, kind of indefinite. However, Jeremiah understood how long that was going to be. But it means many days, a long time. I don't know. It's going to take a long time. I'm going to go on vacation for a week. That's definite. Start, finish. This, don't know. It's pretty much up to the children of Israel. Are you going to learn your lesson or not? Is it going to take longer time? Because God's plan for this is in Hosea 3:5. Afterward, the children of Israel are going to return. After what? After these many days of being isolated, they're going to return. And afterward, the children of Israel shall return and seek the Lord. Seek Jehovah their God and David their king. They shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the latter days. That's wonderful. It says they're going to return. They've been playing the harlot, doing the adultery thing, but they're going to come back to me. God says they're going to come back to me. They're going to return, and that they're going to seek me. They're going to look for Jehovah. And there's that blessing in, seek me while I may be found. God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. They're going to seek Jehovah. And He said He's going to seek David, their king. And obviously, King David is dead and buried by this time. Making a reference to Messiah, Jesus, their king. And then it says that they're going to fear Jehovah and His goodness. Because they've come back. They've seen what God has done was for their benefit. And it's like, you know, I need to be more careful in the future. Because I wouldn't want this to happen again. Fear. Fear. I know we talk about reverence a lot, but here it is. I don't want to make God angry anymore. Fearing that anger is the thing that we're talking about here. They're going to fear the Lord and His goodness. So the question we started out with, how does it feel to be God? How does it feel to be God? Here's what God went through. He loved Israel and didn't have it returned. Has it ever happened to you? Fall in love with somebody and they could care less about you and your feelings? See, now you understand more about God. Now you understand what it's like for God to love and not have it returned. How about to love those who are not loving at all? You know, we have friends. We make friends because they're friendly. We make friends because they like us and we like them. We have things in common, and so we have this fellowship. But let's just say there are people who are antagonistic and violent toward you. You're going to love them? God does. You see, that's what it's like to be God, to love the unloving. And not only that, but to love those who don't deserve your love. And there are a lot of people out there like that. People who don't deserve God's love, but yet He still loves them. And then the last thing I wanted to point out is to love those who are ungrateful. Do you do things for people to be grateful to you for? Do you do things for the thanks? Do you do things for the recognition? Do you do things because people are going to have to depend on you? You see, well, God loves those who are ungrateful, those who don't thank Him, those who could care less. Jesus said, the sun shines, the rain falls on the just and the unjust the same. The unjust are not thankful. The just are. But God loves those who are ungrateful the same, you see. And we understand what it's like to do something kind and loving for somebody and them not be grateful for that. We understand. We understand what it's like. We might change our mind about doing it again, but God never gives up. God's love for us is contrary to human nature. When we think about how God loved Israel, even though they were unfaithful, we think about those who are not grateful, those who are not deserving, those who do not give that love back to us, and we say, forget it. I'm leaving. I'm out of here. But that separation of people that way, that's really, in the Hebrew mind, that's what hate is. Hate isn't animosity or ill feelings. It's a being separate. Just staying away from them. But my mom would say to me and my brother, stay away from each other. Because it'd be fighting, see? Just stay away from each other. Well, in the Hebrew mind, hate, love your neighbors, hate your enemies, that hatred is just stay away from them. Shun them. Don't give them the time of day. Just stay away. Well, God's love is contrary to human nature. And He does things that we might think are a little bit too much. a little bit too far out there. Well, in Isaiah 55, this is what God tells us. And notice when we read this, that it's not beyond us. I want you to keep that in mind. Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9. For my thoughts are not your thoughts. God doesn't think the way we think. He wants us to think the way He thinks. God doesn't think like we do. He wants us to think like He does. My thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are my ways, nor are your ways my ways. He doesn't treat His enemies like we treat our enemies. No, He wants us to treat enemies like He does. You see, that's where godliness comes from. As far as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. We get this settled firmly, packed down in our thinking. I am not God. I'm not. But He wants me to become like He is. His ways and His thoughts are far beyond mine, but he wants us to rise to His way. Wants us to rise to His standards. He doesn't want to lower His standards to suit us. He wants us to raise our standards to suit Him. You see, we can raise ourselves to God's ways. That's what godliness is. And I'm hoping this morning, we close up this little talk, I'm hoping this morning that there's some people sitting here thinking, Pastor, you're nuts. I can't do that. At least one of you might be thinking that. Well, I hope so. Because this is what the Apostle Paul tells us in Ephesians chapter 3. This is a springtime verse. A springtime passage. It always seems to come up in the springtime, although it's not quite here yet. Here the Apostle Paul says, to know the love of Christ. This is what Paul's praying for those in Ephesus for. To know the love of Christ which surpasses knowledge, that you might be filled with the fullness of God. There's no exceptions in that verse. That you might be filled with the fullness of God. So that you, in your humble position, your humble circumstances, your humble situation, you can be raised up to God's standard. And you can love those who are unlovable. You can love those who maybe don't deserve it. You can love those who are ungrateful. And you can keep at it. And now I'm thinking you're saying, you really are nuts, Pastor. Well, wait a minute. Ephesians 3, 20 and 21. I want these to sink down into your consciousness while we close this morning. Now to Him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. You think God can't raise you up to His standards? I am here to tell you this morning, yes, He can, if you let Him to. He is able to do exceedingly abundantly above, beyond what you think is possible. What you think is even possible to ask for. And it is according to the power that works in us. So that to Him be glory in the church by Jesus Christ to all generations, forever and ever. Just take the time to think, what is it that's keeping me from loving people the way God loves people? Be honest. Write it down if you have to. You can overcome it. Being filled with the fullness of God, you can overcome it. More than you think. God's able to do far more than you can think or ask. That's the wonderful thing about our God. He is so amazing. He wants you to be amazing too. That's what he wants.